Committee on Budget. This is the Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources. This is Monday, May 23rd already of 2005, and we're here for a work session on House Bill 5113, which is the budget bill for the Student Assistance Commission. So we'll open a work session on House Bill 5113. Mr. Bender, can you take us through your analysis of the budget?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've distributed a number of items to you today. I just want to make sure that everyone has the items that I'd like to go through today. There are actually just four of them, and also an additional item is just a copy of the Senate bill that originally contained this budget, which was Senate Bill 5527. If your intention is to basically transfer these amendments into 5513, which is currently a blank bill, with some of the numbers changed. These are the numbers that represent the governor's recommended budget on this budget bill. But the other...
So, Mr. Bender, from a structural perspective, we're going to need to amend Senate Bill 5527 into 5113 and then make the changes that you're recommending to that?
That isn't strictly necessary. That's essentially what will be done. But if you adopt these recommendations, then we would place that language into this format.
I understand. Thank you.
Into the House bill?
Yes.
House Bill
5113.
Otherwise, there are four items that I've distributed to you this morning. The first is a recommendation dated with today's date, entitled LFO Recommendation on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, House Bill 5113. The second item is a list of performance measures that we, as part of the work session process, we ask you to go through and to approve performance measures for the agency for the next biennium. Then there is our standard, what we call the Orbitz report, which is the budget system report on the budget, which shows the changes that LFO is recommending and that we will place in the budget system permanently if you adopt them. And finally, there's just a one-page little table here in the back, projected opportunity grant award amounts, which is a response to one of the questions that we had when we looked at this when the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee reviewed this budget. It was actually Representative Jensen had a question and wanted some information as to showing what the funding on the opportunity grant would be by sector and the number of students that were served. So I've put this together, and we can actually get back to this when we get to that portion of the budget, if that's okay. But what I would ask to do, if you would, Madam Chair and members, is go back to this memo, and we could work through that. And basically, it starts with the more technical adjustments and then leaves the final funding decisions and performance measures in the back. And again, as you did, as you've been doing with your other bills, and certainly as you did with House Bill 5092 when you worked on that last week, our recommendation is we're just listing here recommendations that describe adjustments to the governor's recommended budget as printed, and the recommendations shown are to policy packages 100 or above. I'm in the first paragraph here on page one, the last sentence of that first paragraph, where it states that LFO recommends that the subcommittee approve the base budget and packages numbered below 100 as the basis upon which to make the adjustments that we're asking you, that we're recommending for you. That is to say, so we have a starting point, so we can get to where the ending point will be. I do want to comment one thing about these packages numbered below 100, these are the adjustments to the base budget, and these are typical adjustments for roll-ups and costs and for phase-ins and phase-outs of programs and other standard adjustments that we normally do. However, in this particular budget, there are some very significant adjustments here that we are recommending that you approve, And those are the budgetary adjustments that incorporate the fact that the agency has withdrawn from the loan guarantee program. All of those loan guarantee costs were in their base budget because they were approved in the 2003 biennium. I'm just pointing it out to note that in this particular case, there is a very significant change in approving the base budget, but of course we do recommend that to reflect the agency's current activities.
And Mr. Bender, we have members of the committee that are not familiar with the education issues, and I'm wondering if you could take just a few moments and discuss what the issues are around the federal loan program with relation to OSAC, just as a matter of background.
Prior to the biennium for which you're budgeting now, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission has administered a number of programs. And their largest program in terms of the number of employees that were dedicated to working to that program was the acting as a guarantor, as the state's student loan guarantor, in the Federal Family Education Loan Program. That's the Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program. Under this program, OSAC had guaranteed loans that were qualified loans that were issued to students. As a result of these loan guarantees, banks and other private lending institutions loaned money to students who might otherwise not qualify for a loan at all because they didn't have sufficient credit history or collateral for that, or in cases for students that may have been able to obtain a loan or their families obtain a loan, this enabled them to obtain a loan at a lower interest rate because repayment was guaranteed, and therefore the bank or credit union or savings and loan did not demand as high an interest rate as they would for a non-guaranteed loan. What OSAC's role was as a guarantor in this program was, in essence, if a situation arose where a student began to go into default and not repay the loan, they were charged with intervening and working to help prevent the loan from going into default. And in cases where that was not successful and the student did go into default, they essentially were required to pay back or pay off the loan to the lender and then attempt to make collections from the student at that point. This was an activity that OSAC had engaged in for some time. They were not the only service provider of these services in the state of Oregon. There were a number of other entities that were guaranteeing loans here in Oregon. And the agency was not able to continue to perform this activity in a manner that enabled them to recover the costs of their costs of participating in this program. This had always been a self-supported program. There was no general fund that was provided, and the costs of the program were paid from the fees that were earned by their participation in the program. These fees were typically set by the federal government, since it was a federal program. They were not able to continue this program in an economic fashion, and they did withdraw from the program. The services, they've transferred their portfolio over, and the services, they are no longer participating in that particular program. The remaining programs involve a number of items that they administer. The primary program that OSAC continues to administer is the state's Opportunity Grant Program, which is the state's grant award based on need for students, and both in community colleges, at OUS, and at independent colleges here in Oregon. They also administer a number of other scholarship programs, some of them which are state-funded, some of them which are federally funded, and a large number of scholarships which are privately funded. The state provides general fund support in support of both the Opportunity Grant, the additional state scholarship programs, which are the Nursing Services Program and the Rural Health Services Program, and provides dollar support to support the administration of those activities. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission also houses the Office of Degree Authorization.
And, Chair, before we get off too far, because this is all new to me, the federal loan program, is that reflected in this big, huge change in 090? Is that what that is?
Well, let's get Mr. Bender to take us through those low-level changes in the budget. But the issue that I just wanted to get the members to have a feel for was that the federal student loan program was about 70% of the operating capacity of the agency. And over the interim, it has kind of consumed the commission's time and the agency's time and a lot of the capacity within DAS and also LFO's time to work a negotiating process through with the federal government to resolve all the outstanding issues around the program and move the extra staff out of the agency that aren't needed anymore because of the loss of the program. And so we're starting here with a very much reorganized and changed agency.
That would reflect the reduction in FTEs here. It is a big change with these numbers, so okay, I'll be patient. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I believe I was just mentioning the Office of Degree Authorization, which is charged with enforcing statutes relating to the use of degrees in the state of Oregon and also relating to the approval of new programs by private institutions that are not domiciled here in Oregon. So these are the remaining functions of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Representative Shoffley.
If I'm out of turn here, I'll wait patiently, but I just don't want to get too far afield and then have to come back. Then who will be administering? Will the federal government then be administering this loan program then? Is that what we're transferring it to?
Mm-hmm. No, it was not transferred to the federal government itself. What the federal government does is the federal government authorizes other entities to actually be guarantors. And
private sector businesses.
Well, I'm trying to do it.
Well, they're actually businesses that do it.
Do the stuff. Okay. I'll find out more about it.
And I'm drawing a blank right now as to the name of the
Education Credit Management Corporation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are also, however, other guarantors that Oregon schools and colleges work with here in Oregon, but the portfolio of OSAC was transferred to ECMC.
Okay, thank you. Listen quietly now. Thank you very much.
Well, and that was one of the issues that kind of brought this to a head, because these businesses that specialize in administering these loans they're very efficient. And part of the problem that OSAC had was that with the portfolio that OSAC was administering, they couldn't meet the level of efficiency that was in these private sector companies. So that was one of the issues that was causing this problem to get where it ended up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Bender.
Going back to the memo, the table just at the top here shows what the funding amounts would be if you approved the LFO recommendation. And as Representative Shoffler was mentioning, there is a big decline here. If you look at the change from 0305 to 0507, and the decline that you see in the other funds, both the other funds number and the non-limited number, which are non-limited other funds, and also the decline in the number of positions reflects the agency's withdrawal from the loan program. That is how we're talking about an agency that had 87 positions approved last biennium. Under the LFO recommendation, there'd be 23 positions approved this time, and all of the loan activity is deleted. If I may start with the numbered recommendations now. The first recommendation, number one, relates to the Aspire program. I just listed a number of programs that the commission is involved with, and I failed to include Aspire in that list. Aspire is a program that doesn't provide financial aid to students. Instead, it provides information to students. The program helps high school students acquire information on options for additional education beyond graduation, after they graduate from high school. It focuses, the way it works is it focuses on training volunteer counselors who work with students in high schools throughout the state. And the number of high schools that they are participating in has been growing recently. This is a program that receives no general funds. It's financed entirely from gifts, donations, and fees paid by participating schools. And the primary source of funding for this are some of the funds are received indirectly through the federal AmeriCorps program, which supports volunteer service throughout the country. So this is a type of volunteer service that AmeriCorps helps to finance. There are also grants from the Oregon Community Foundation and from the Ford Family Foundation that support this particular program. The governor's recommended budget includes package 202, which would have added about just under $600,000 in other funds and established a new position to help assist in the expansion of this program. Again, the package required that the funds come from grant and other sources, and gift sources, and these funds would be used to expand the program as had been requested by the agency. What we are recommending, and this is in concurrence with the agency's own forecast of activity in the Aspire program, we recommend that you reduce the other funds expenditure limitation in this package by $283,732, and you eliminate the added position, or the position that would be added in this package. If you approve this recommendation, there would still be money in package 202. There would be $313,320 in other funds limitation in package 202, which essentially would continue to allow for expansion in the Aspire program. But the expansion that would be allowed if you approve the recommendation would now be expansion to the level of activity in Aspire currently. The program has grown, and they have been successful in getting additional grant funding during the current biennium. And this package would allow the program to continue to operate at its expected current levels and would not establish other funds limitation for which there wouldn't be sufficient donations to pay for these expenses. So we are recommending that in the event that the agency is successful in getting more donations than we and they anticipate at this point, the emergency board does have authority under its authorities to increase the other funds expenditure limitation. So the agency would be able to come to the emergency board if there were more money available and request authority to spend it during the interim.
So this year. Just so I can clarify this. So currently, this $313,000 reflects the current operating expenditures. If they go out and raise more than that, then they come back here and request that they can spend it.
Right.
Okay.
They're free to raise as much money as they possibly can, but if they do raise more money than we give them the expenditure limitation from, then the mechanism would be for them to come to the e-board and explain their situation to us, and then we would increase the amount that they have permission to spend.
All right. Thank you. Fair enough.
Mr. Bender, was this the program that had the issue around the beginning balance?
Yes, it is, the program.
And did you want to discuss that now, or did you want to discuss it later?
I had it later in my list here, but I'd be happy to discuss it now.
It's fine to do it when you have it bundled in with those other items, too. Okay, is there any discussion here on LFO's recommendation on Package 202, the Aspire program? I take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to Package 202.
So moved.
Is there discussion on the motion? Is there an objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second recommendation relates to a package in the Governor's recommended budget. This is package 300, and it refers to the Oregon Financial Aid Exchange, which normally goes by its acronym of OFACS. We are recommending that you approve this package. What the Oregon Financial Aid Exchange is it's a computerized data exchange and matching program that is used by institutions to match enrollment records when students are co-enrolled for purposes of delivering financial aid. So if you have a student that's attending both, say, an OUS institution and a community college, and they're only eligible for certain types of financial aid, and there are certain financial aid awards that are only available to full-time students, but the student does not qualify full-time at either of those institutions. OFACS is a system for tracking this so that it can be determined where the student is going, what the student's costs are, and what financial aid packages are available for that particular student. Package 300 will allow the agency to spend up to $37,244 of other funds in support of the system. The funds would be contributed by participating institutions, so they would actually contribute to the commission to administer this program on their behalf. We are recommending approval.
Mr. Bender, is this a system that already exists?
It is a system that is already existing, and there are a number of institutions that are involved in this system, and I believe that more are intending to participate in the future.
So this is essentially some kind of a subscription fee for this agency to participate in the program?
What this is actually the agency had originally requested general fund to help support the cost of this program, and the governor's budget replaced that and said that instead of general fund, the roughly $37,244 should be raised from fees that the participants are paying, or that the participating institutions who are using the system, that's where the funds should be collected. And LFO concurs with that recommendation.
But there's no system development issues here or anything like that. This is just buying into a system that already exists.
The OFACS is up and running, and I do believe that these funds would assist in expansion of that. Is that correct? No? Excuse me.
Could the director come forward?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Margie Lau. I'm the Interim Executive Director of the Student Assistance Commission. The Oregon Financial Aid Exchange System is an existing system that's really very simple in its design, but creates a very useful product to all of the participating schools. It's very easy to add new schools as users, and as we do that, what we'll do, there's just a little bit of startup effort on the part of our linking them into the system, but it does not require a lot of maintenance and support. So as we add more institutions, what we'll do is reduce the cost to the participating schools across the board.
Thank you. Any more questions or comments on package 300? I would take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on package 300. Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 3 relates to package 801, which is titled in all state agency budgets the LFO analyst adjustments. Package 801 includes an adjustment that includes adjustments that are applied to all state agency budgets. And in this case, for this agency, we're only recommending one adjustment in package 801, and that is to reflect the fact that there's an over-budgeting, it turns out, of PERS contributions in the governor's recommended budget, since at that time, when the governor put the budget together, it was anticipated that the PERS contribution rate would be 15.52% per salary, but the PERS board has established the rate at 14.63% of salary. Because of this, OSAC's costs for PERS will be less than the amounts that were anticipated in the governor's budget, and we recommend that the subcommittee reduce the amounts in the budget that are not needed to pay these this portion of the PERS contribution. The reduction is shown here in the table under under Recommendation 3 and amounts to a total reduction of $7,718 in general fund and $9,987 in other funds. I would like to point out one thing that typically we would also have at this point an adjustment for the reduction in the Attorney General charge here, but the as part of Package 811, which we'll talk about later, there were significant reductions in Attorney General charges far exceeding any reduction from the rate alone. So we're just dealing with all of those in 811 and just dealing with the PERS here in 801.
Representative Jensen.
Madam Chair, I assume some of those reductions in the Attorney General charges came from the DROP programs, the student loan programs.
Yes, yes.
Further questions or comments? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I would take a motion then to accept Mr. Bender's recommendation to package 801. I have a motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next recommendation, number 4, are the Ways and Means Adjustments, Package 802. These are recommendations for base budget and essential package adjustments that are specific to this state agency budget. We have three recommendations that we combine or include in this particular package, and they deal with revenue changes. The first is to revise the federal funds expenditure limitation to parallel changes in federal funds revenue projections. The federal funds that this agency receives come from the federal government under what are known as the LEAP, L-E-A-P, and the SLEEP programs. These funds come to the agency and are used entirely to support the Opportunity Grant. In other words, they're combined with the general fund and lottery dollars that you approve to finance Oregon Opportunity Grant awards. What we do is we set, or the state typically sets, the expenditure limitation equal to what these revenues are projected to be, so that all of these federal funds can then be turned around and sent out to students in the form of financial aid. This is what the governor's budget had proposed as well. The governor's budget had included federal funds at the level to allow all of them to be spent, and the amount had been about $2.1 million. Now it turns out, though, that the projection for revenues is cut in half because of the fact that it appears that Congress is not going to reauthorize LEAP and SLEEP. And if that does occur, we'll still get payments for the upcoming academic year, but for 06-07, there will be no federal funds available. So this is an unfortunate event. But
how far through the congressional process is this? Is this going to happen for sure?
Well, there is. I don't think it's absolutely certain, but it's likely, because in the congressional, there's the authorization phase of the federal budget process and then the appropriation phase. And in this particular phase, Congress essentially sets maximum spending for various programs, and then the appropriation phase, they approve some level of funding that doesn't exceed the guidelines that they've set up. The guidelines that have been approved do not include any funds for the LEAP and SLEEP program. So it's my understanding that these can be overturned I believe they can be overturned later in the process by a simple majority vote in the House and by a supermajority of 60 votes in the Senate. But it does not appear that, at least at this point, it does not appear that there will be funding for the second year of the biennium.
So along with this, then, goes away that small maintenance of effort issue that was related to receiving those federal funds in the past.
Yes, that will be gone. Now, again, this is another issue that the emergency board, because these are federal funds and all you are doing is limiting the amount of federal funds that the agency can spend, you're not determining how much money they're getting. This is another situation where if there is ultimately funding added for this program, the agency will have, or the emergency board will have authority to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation at the agency's request. But we believe it is important to pass the budget with the best projection of what these federal revenues would be, and therefore we recommend you reduce the federal funds expenditure limitation by $1,051,930. There is also, I'm now on page 3 of the recommendation memo, and this is the first complete paragraph on this page that starts off, LFO also recommends. We also recommend that you increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation by $766,429. This, like the federal funds case, is to parallel an increase in projected revenues. The lottery funds that are provided in this budget are combined with the general fund and with the federal funds we were just talking about to finance Oregon Opportunity Grant awards. However, the lottery funds are somewhat different in this budget than the typical lottery funds that you deal with, in the sense that these lottery funds are earnings on the Education Stability Fund, which is financed with lottery monies, that are dedicated to the Opportunity Grant program by law. And the new forecast that came out in May shows that these earnings and distributions to OSAC are now projected to be $766,429 greater than was projected at the time that the governor's recommended budget was put together. Typically, in a situation where there are now more lottery funds than before, LFO would not come with a recommendation to go ahead and spend more just because there are more here. And the reason why we would not come up with that recommendation, and the co-chairs are working to balance a budget, and in order to balance that, they are looking at the total general fund and lottery funds that are available. And this would need to be a decision that would fit within their rebalance plan before LFO could recommend it. In this case, though, we're making an exception, and we are recommending the increase in lottery funds for the simple reason that they are dedicated by law to this program. So if the funds are available and the agency doesn't spend them for the opportunity grant, then they cannot be used for any other purpose. So we are recommending that you increase the expenditure limitation for these funds so that they can be used for the purpose for which they are designated by law. But however, in order to not increase total state spending beyond the level in the co-chairs' budgets, we recommend a similar reduction in the general fund appropriation of the same amount of $766,429. These funds would then become, unlike the lottery funds, these funds are available for any purpose for which the legislature would choose to appropriate them.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation to package 802? I take a motion. I have the motion to accept the LFO recommendation to package 802. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. Without objection, motion carries. Mr. Bender.
The next recommendation number 5 under package 811 is what we're calling operations expenditure reductions. What these represent are the following. These are reductions that recommendations that were initiated by the agency itself after it reviewed its expenditure patterns and determined or estimated what the expenditure needs for the agency would be in the 05-07 biennium. The governor's budget put in additional general fund to help support the functions that were previously financed by the loan program and that were to continue in the 05-07 biennium because the loan program funds that had been supporting them are no longer available. This was done as a placeholder and in order to assure that there would be enough general fund in the overall budget to finance these costs once they were determined. The costs, the agency did go through and look at these costs and proposed the number of reductions which LFO is recommending that you approve in package 811. The services and supply reductions that you see there at the top of the table on page 3 are identical to the services and supply reductions that the agency submitted to the Joint Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. So we are recommending those. The personal services numbers are identical in their total dollar amounts, but there's a little change in the fund shifts, which we've discussed with the agency and with DAS. These are also, there's a reduction, there are slightly less because we've taken out the PERS reduction elsewhere. But we are also recommending these personal service reduction amounts, which as you can see total $202,000, a little more than $202,000 in general fund, a little more than $251,000 in total funds. And as a part of these personal service reductions, I'd like to speak a little bit about what is in there because it's a little more complicated than the services and supplies, which are just reductions in both services and supplies and state government service charges. Under the personal service reductions, there are actually three things that are going on. There are five positions that are being reduced in there will be two positions that are actually being entirely eliminated, two other positions that are being reduced in the budget in their from full-time positions to part-time positions, and a fifth position, which is not actually being reduced, but which the agency will be able to take some vacancy savings because the position will be vacant for a period of the upcoming biennium. The chart on page 4 details and identifies the four positions that have FTE reductions, the first two positions that are being eliminated in the budget and the fiscal impact of doing so. The second two are positions where that are currently full-time but that are being reduced to part-time positions. One, the position number 2200.000 is being reduced from one FTE to three-quarters FTE. The other position that's being reduced is being reduced from one FTE to 0.6 FTE. And then the position in the Office of Degree Authorization is not being eliminated, reduced on a permanent basis, but there will be vacancy savings this biennium at a savings of $25,615. So in total, we're recommending that you eliminate two positions, reduce total FTE by 2.65, and the fiscal impact here that you see is just a part of the personal services total on the prior page. The other things that are not included, that are included in the prior page but are not included here, include shifting of personal service costs from general fund to other funds in the information services program area. There's a shift in payment of personal service costs for one position and grants and scholarships in the other direction from from other funds to general fund. And I think I wrote that backwards in my memo. I apologize for that. That should say, this is in the second to the last line of that first paragraph. where it says it shifts $20,296 of personal service costs in the grant and scholarships program area from, and it should say from other funds to general fund. Excuse me.
So to general fund from other funds.
Yes, or to general fund from other funds. But together, they result in the savings you see on page 3, and we are recommending approval.
Discussion of the LFO recommendation to Package 811. I take a motion to approve the LFO recommendation. I have the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
Package 6 is the final recommendation that relates directly to expenditures. You'll see there are some additional recommendations relating to revenues, fund balances, performance measures, and the Jobs Plus program. But I would like to talk in some depth about recommendation 6, which is the LFO recommendation to a package in the governor's budget, which is identified as Package 200, entitled Opportunity Grant, Serve All Eligibles. This was the package, or is the package, in the governor's budget that increases general fund, and there's also a federal funds increase in support, to finance opportunity grant awards. And Package 200, as it is in the governor's budget, includes slightly more than $47 million in general fund and about $864,000 in federal funds as an increase to increase the support for the opportunity grant by about 110% and to expand the number of opportunity grants awarded and to increase the grant amounts. As you may recall, the elements of expansion that are included in the governor's budget are to allow sufficient funds so that all students who are currently eligible under the program but are not being awarded grants because the funding has run out, to allow all of those students to be awarded. Currently, funding runs out after a little less than 70% of all students receive awards, and the other 30 to 35% are informed that they are not going to receive an opportunity grant because funding is not available. The package 200 includes sufficient funds to allow these remaining 30 to 35% of students to receive awards. The governor's package 202 also establishes awards for part-time students for the first time that part-time students would be eligible. And these are students that are enrolled in 6 or more credit hours during a particular term. They would be eligible to receive one-half the amount that a full-time student would receive attending the same institution. The governor's package also establishes increases the award amounts for full-time students to $1,500 for community college students, $1,800 for OUS students, and $3,600 for independent college students. Although I said increases awards, there actually for some of the independent college students, this would result in a decrease in award level and not an increase in award level, since currently the college award amounts vary by independent college. But under this proposal, all would receive a common $3,600 award. Finally, the governor's package would provide an additional $500 for full-time students that meet merit-based criteria established by the commission. LFO recommends that the subcommittee reduce the general fund appropriation by $27 million from the amount in the governor's budget. This would comply with funding allowed under both the House and the Senate co-chairs' budgets, which are actually identical for this particular state agency. Net of this reduction, the budget will still add $20 million, $157,211 of general fund for the Opportunity Grant program. So it would still have an increase of approximately 50% in the program over the current biennium levels. And it would allow expansions of the program. Primarily, in a nutshell, what this would allow is this would delay the expansion of the full and part-time programs to the second year of the biennium. So under the first year of the biennium, the program would continue to operate as it is currently operating. Under the second year, it would expand to serve all eligibles, full-time students, and also to establish and serve the eligible part-time students. It would not include the merit-based award supplement that is in the governor's budget, and it would not include the increase in opportunity grant award amounts that is proposed in the governor's budget. Instead, it would continue to have the commission set award levels as it does now at an estimate of 11% of the cost of attendance. So the award amounts would continue to increase because the cost of attendance has been increasing, but it would not increase to the levels that it would under the governor's budget. We also are recommending that to clarify the program expansions financed in this budget, we're recommending that you adopt a budget note to identify what those expansions are and how you want the commission to implement those. If you want, I can read the budget note. I will read this verbatim. It's quite descriptive in explaining the expansions. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission shall use the funds available for the Opportunity Grant Program in the approved budget to fund awards for all full-time students eligible for an opportunity grant beginning in the 2006-07 academic year. The commission shall maintain the eligibility criteria for full-time students in place at the close of the 2004-05 academic year and shall calculate award amounts using the methodology applied to calculate award amounts for the 04-05 academic year, for both academic years of the 05-07 biennium. What that sentence is saying, first of all, is the second part of it indicates that the award amount methodology they shall continue to use what they've been doing, which is the 11% of costs. The first part of that sentence about maintain the eligibility criteria refers to the fact that if you want to serve all eligibles, we have to know who will be eligible. And this would direct the Assistance Commission not to change the criteria for eligibility in terms of expanding that to make more students eligible or restricting that to make fewer students eligible. The comment about in place at the close of the 04-05 academic year, the intention of that language is to include a change that the commission has recently adopted to put an asset test restriction or to put an asset restriction in for eligibility in the opportunity grant. So that's a little bit of a change than how awards were granted at the beginning of the 04-05 academic year. But under this proposal, students who meet the income criteria, that is to say they have low incomes, but they have a sufficient level of assets so that they would not be eligible for the federal Pell Award, would also not be eligible for an opportunity grant. Under the old rules, there were students who had significant assets and were receiving opportunity grants. So the intent of that language is to clarify that that change is anticipated to be continued. Going back to the budget note, I'm now on the last sentence on page 4. The commission shall also use the funds available for the opportunity grant program in the approved budget to provide awards beginning in the 06-07 academic year to part-time students who meet the criteria for opportunity grant award eligibility. The award amounts shall be one-half the amount available to a full-time student enrolled at the same institution and shall be available to eligible students enrolled for a minimum of 6 credit hours. The final sentence talks about the first year of the biennium. In the 2005-06 academic year, the commission shall spend as much funds as is prudent to finance opportunity grant awards to eligible full-time students and to allow sufficient funds to remain to implement the identified program expansions in the 06-07 academic year. That is to say that the overriding policy, if you approve this funding, would be to implement or a full-time, you know, a serve-all eligible program in the 06-07 academic year, and the commission is to manage the total funds since it's a biennial appropriation so that there will be funds available to do that.
Questions or comments? Representative March.
This seems a little bit problematic in how it's going to roll out for the commission. And then secondly, of course, we're reducing the general fund appropriation by $27 million here, but this budget isn't in, we're looking, dealing with in a vacuum. The original intent of, or stated intent of the co-chair's budgets was to add some $30 million, as I recall, to the OUS budget for purposes of tuition freeze. And we heard a lot of testimony in committee that tuition freeze was not necessarily the best approach, even from students, that we would be better to roll out the student opportunity grant to those eligible in the beginning rather than do the tuition freeze model and allow tuition to go up maybe a lesser amount. So that's my concern here. We've got two things. One is I'm not seeing whether the other part of the OUS budget has that money in it. And secondly, the rollout effects here are seem to be a little bit problematic.
And in terms of, let me address first of all the OUS budget. There are discussions going on, especially with the House co-chair, relative to the issues that you raise, and I'm confident that we're going to come to a resolution that's going to meet the needs of the students and the system much better than the original co-chair's presentation or co-chair's decision.
And will that result in then us being able to roll this program out sooner?
No, this program I think will need to remain with the configuration that it is right now simply because of the funding that's available to go in this direction.
Well, yeah, I think...
And when you make a statement that this is problematic in the rollout, could you give me a little bit more information about what you're seeing there?
You're starting up with, maybe, I don't know, Mr. McGee, would you and the commission like to address this a little better? It just seems like they've got to hoard some money, making sure that they've got it for the next year and whether or not the students are there or not. So.
Is that going to be a problem?
I don't know.
Madam Chair, thank you. Bill McGee from Department of Administrative Services. James Sager from the Governor's Office couldn't be here today. He's with the Governor in Portland. Of course, as you know, the Governor has not agreed to the level of funding in the co-chair's budget, but we did want to talk to some extent about the expectations for how the funds will be managed under the co-chair's budget, particularly in the first year of the biennium, and I think if I ask the Commission folks to do that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Margie Lau with Student Assistance Commission, three concerns come to mind. One, we are well into the grant awarding process in partnership with all of the institutions in Oregon as we speak for the coming school year. We have sent out cautious signals based on the prior awarding levels that we had in the previous, in fact, the current biennium. But schools are certainly aware of what else is being proposed and discussed across the state presently. Part of our awarding process has us, as I explained to members of the Education Subcommittee and the Joint Ways and Means Committee, it's a bit like trying to manage an airline and trying to estimate how many passengers are going to board a flight. As students are going through their decision processes to decide where they're going to go to school and how they're going to be able to finance that, they have a number of different options that are presented to them by all of the various schools they apply to attend. We have used a lot of history in which to base our projections about what will be what we refer to as the pickup rate, or what our airline analogy, what they use in terms of how many people who book a flight are actually going to show up to board that flight on any particular day. As we sit here today, we are at the 65% level of that past history. The concern that the commissioners had very much last Friday at their meeting, as I tried to help explain what we might be looking at this morning, was a concern that if we wanted to maintain the eligibility in the current level that we have committed to in this biennium, in the coming school year, we would be awarding up to the 70% level. And to basically have to hedge the second year costs in the coming biennium, and knowing that we have to hit that target about how many people are going to board this opportunity in that second year, we would have to be much more cautious in what we do in the first year. And that would have us, at this point, stop doing any further awarding for the coming school year, actually putting us probably at 65% instead of getting to the 70% level that has been the commission's policy for the last 3 years at least. We see that as a real conundrum as policymakers on the executive branch side, but also for you as members of the legislative branch, that the choices of balancing the needs of the coming year's students against the even greater opportunities of the students in that second year. And also really the language in this budget note is very restrictive in terms of any possible ways in which we might have to handle any changes in the economy or in students' behavior, because these figures do vary in all of the various elements that we try to, it's like the state's revenue forecast. There's a lot of variables, and all of them move around on us, and not always with offsetting adjustments.
Mr. Clem.
Thank you. I don't know if one of your Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Brian Clem. I'm the chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and I've been on the commission, I think, now for 6 years, and the chair for the last three. And if I could just summarize what our concern is, it's not that you want to expand the program, because we think that's a laudable goal as well. And it's not even that you're waiting to year two to do it, even though we are concerned about those costs and encumbering the next legislature to then pick up those costs in the next biennium, because that's a 20-some million-dollar increase you're putting onto your colleagues in the next biennium. It's really the restrictiveness and the I'm trying to think of a polite word to describe how it was put on Friday, but it's the walking all over the authority of the commission to make good decisions when there's less budget. Meaning, if you fix things like the methodology and the eligibility and then tell us to be prudent, we can't be prudent because you fixed all the criteria that we would use to be prudent with. And so if you said we have a goal that we want to move in the second year towards full expansion and do what you need to do to meet that goal, then we could go out and figure out whether we reduce grant sizes or restrict the eligibility further. But to fix all of our hydraulics and then tell us to be prudent to make sure we have enough money, that's a frightening thing for me to sign on to. I'll be in front of e-board saying, I tried, but you fixed everything that I could possibly adjust to make sure your budget worked. And that's our big problem, I think, is we meet every month, we hold public hearings, we speak with financial aid directors and students that are trying to do a good job of managing the budget. And I guess my commissioners and I feel like we didn't do that good of a job, or people don't trust us because they're fixing in all the different formulas that are built into statute for us to be able to work with. And it's awkward to know how to proceed, to be honest.
Mr. Bender, could you respond with LFO's perspective on this?
Madam Chair, LFO's perspective is that the commission is established in statute to administer this program on behalf of the state, and that you as the legislature, if you did approve a significant increase in funding, which would be approved if you adopted the co-chair's level of funding, certainly it would be helpful, I think, to the agency to direct to them what it is you're trying to do. And I think that it's clear that what this particular proposal on the basis of the co-chairs is designed to do is it's designed to essentially do what the governor wanted to do in most respects, except that because of financial constraints, it is delaying that to the second year of the biennium. If, for example, you approved the governor's recommended budget, I would think that in that case, too, you would want to direct the commission to let them know why it is that you're giving them a 110% increase in the funding that they had in the prior year. So I think it would, LFO's opinion, it would be perfectly reasonable for you to outline the type of student aid program that you are committing these funds to. The chair of the commission has stated a concern about flexibility on their part in terms of administering the program. I believe that the flexibility in this particular case will be in establishing the cutoff dates in the first year of the biennium. This commission has always had the problem that the executive director mentioned, where it is not possible for it to completely forecast what the cost of the opportunity grant program is going to be, since it's based upon the decisions of students where to attend, whether to attend, and that sort of thing. It's out of their control. So they've always had to manage, in a two-year budget, they've always had to manage their expenditures in the first year in order to assure that there's enough money in the second year. And this is all we would be asking them to do in this case as well. It would be a more difficult situation than it has been in the past, because clearly this is a new program, and it's not certain how much it would cost to operate this program, but we have received, it is not as if we have not received projections from the commission as to what the costs of the governor's program would be, and we've looked at modifications as to what the costs would be under the co-chair's alternative as well. Therefore, it seems reasonable to expect these to be the costs. It seems reasonable to have the commission manage the program as it is charged with doing. And it seems reasonable to not expect an emergency board appearance requesting more funds unless there's clearly something that was they could show that was clearly unanticipated. And under the budget note, we could see, the emergency board could see what was anticipated. So if there had been a request, they could determine whether additional funding is warranted for the program. I'd also, if I may, just want to point out this other sheet that I've distributed, which is the projected opportunity grant award amounts under both the governor's recommended and the co-chair's budgets. And this here shows LFO's projections of the dollar amounts and the number of awards for both full-time and part-time students under the two alternatives. And of course, the legislative LFO recommendation is consistent with the co-chair's columns there. The co-chair's amounts are, again, $27 million less than is the amount in the governor's recommended budget. We do note that because federal funds are reduced also, that this will make it more difficult for the commission to serve as many this will make it unable for the commission to serve as many students the first year of the biennium as it would have if the federal funds had not been there, or if all the federal funds had been there.
Representative Shoffley, you've been very patient.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will be as professional as I can be too. I may object to this package, and I will not object to the budget as a whole on the floor. I reserve the right to change that on the floor. But, Madam Chair, I think I'm objecting for the primary reason for my objecting to this is not because there isn't enough money in this. We all know that we could probably do a lot more with a lot more money. My primary objective is not against the agency or the commission. My primary objection here is we have this money in this state. It's sitting on the ground in this state, and we are living in a dream world because we're not willing to go out and do the things to generate it. And you know what? What really bothers me about this right here is that the very same people that this would help if we could fund it out 100% are the exact same people that come into this building and object to more flexible land use, more taking advantage sustainably of the natural resources we possess in this state, and making an environment where people will invest so we can build industry and manufacture and put working people to work in the state that would generate way more than enough money to fund this fully. That's why I'm going to object, Madam Chair. And this is just totally frustrating for me. Thank you for your time. I appreciate your patience in indulging me with venting.
Thank you. Representative Jentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to admit that if I probably were making the total decision on this with the limited information that I have, that I probably would have chosen the other route of allowing the university budget or university tuition, community colleges tuition, to go up as those institutions needed, and put the other money that is anticipated that's anticipated to cost, to put that in the opportunity grant. However, I recognize that life is not all a simple formula, and some kind of decisions need to be made. In reference to the testimonies that we heard on this in the from the students and others in phase two, the message was somewhat unclear, and I think the actual hope seemed to be that we would do both, to have the tuition froze and the full funding of the opportunity grants. And I agree that had I been a student, that would have been what I certainly would have been advocating for. I didn't get a clear message from the students. I don't think on this as to, given the option, this is what we want to do. Although there were some pointed specific questions to students at that time. I will be supporting the co-chair's budget, but I will admit that, like others, there are probably other things that I would like to do, but there's more that I would like to do. But at this particular time, I don't see that's necessarily possible. I have one other concern, and I don't believe, and maybe during phase two I got a good answer to this, but if I did, I've forgotten it, or I was incapable of understanding it at the time. I'm not sure which. But the one issue that continued to kind of plagues me, is the student who is taking 10 credits at OSU or Oregon University System, and 4 credits at a community college someplace. They are obviously therefore eligible for part time at Oregon University System on their 10 credit load, and eligible for 0 on their community college even in the second year of this. And I'm curious, and I understand there's some joint enrollment things, and I don't know whether that would solve that problem as a full-time student, and I don't know whether those joint enrollment appear at all with all of the community colleges at all of the universities, in which case those few that did would and the few some would not. And I'd like to ask if I can...
Please.
Response to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, to clarify on your question, when a student is dual enrolled at multiple institutions, usually the larger institution takes the lead for that student and drives more of the awarding process. Most of those institutions that have dual enrollment are using the Oregon Financial Aid Exchange or some locally derived facsimile of that. and are using that in order to identify what the student's total credit load is. It's really important for them, for the grant that they're getting from the Student Assistance Commission, but also in terms of their total loan and federal financial aid packaging as well. So the schools are very careful to coordinate that so the student doesn't end up falling between the cracks.
So what I thought I heard you say there was that it is the total amount of credit that the student is enrolled in, not with not just specific to one institution or the other, but it's a cumulative award.
As long as the student, Madam Chair, is making sure that both institutions are aware of the dual enrollment. If a student enrolls at two separate institutions and doesn't create that awareness for their local financial aid office, then they don't have the way in which to put that together.
Representative Johnson, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and I certainly recognize that students have to have some responsibility. If they're not informing us as to what's going on, there's no reason that we have to be accountable for dragging that information out of them. So I do appreciate that. And I believe that's what's going to take place, but I hope this continues to be massaged so that we don't lose, so that we're sure we don't lose some people here because of our part of the system, not their part. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Mark.
Thank you. That triggered another couple of questions around the adjustment in cutoff dates, for example. Are the cutoff dates for all of the institutions the same? And then, prospectively, will it be different for part-time versus full-time?
Madam Chair, Representative March, as I understand the budget note instruction, the cutoff dates will only apply to the first year of the coming biennium. And the cutoff dates rarely are the same. Right now, the cutoff dates are for the four-year institutions dates in the month of April. And we have not yet established them for the community colleges. The enrollment process and the financial aid awarding is a much lengthier process for community college enrollment. And those dates a year ago were about, I believe, July 9th was the cutoff date for last year.
So if you find yourselves worried about the next budget cycle, the following year of awards when you go into full time, is that going to affect the community colleges for this time?
Madam Chair, Representative March, these are issues that the Commission is going to have to consider because right now, as the instruction stands, our only place in which to adjust any variables is in the first year. So that's one where I think we are probably done doing awarding unless there's something that changes for students attending four-year institutions. We will stay with those dates that we've already set for April, and we'll be probably more modest in how we set the dates for the community colleges. The dates right now that we have set for the four-year institutions are earlier than what last year's dates were, and probably the same might be anticipated for community college students also.
And I would also note for the record, Representative March, that the House co-chair's recommendation for funding the community college system will, there is instruction in there that the tuition increases should be held at the lowest level, and the projections that we have from the system are that there will be minimal tuition increases at the funding level that the House co-chair has chosen and that we have passed out of this committee and out of the full committee.
The tuition, though, doesn't affect all students equally. Those at the lower end of the scale are more apt, you know, those needing the opportunity grant are more apt to be affected by the opportunity grant.
Okay, and I would also just like to have introduced into the discussion that there is a certain amount of responsibility on the part of the students here to be proactively involved in the application process and to get that part of it done. I recognize, committee, that any time that we change the way that we do things, and I think that adding the part-time students to the mix here has been something that I've been interested in doing for a couple of bienniums now, And I'm very happy that we finally are to a place where we can phase that in, and that we need to recognize that there are going to be some hiccups as we implement this program. But I think that the Commission particularly has done an outstanding job of working with various bizarre scenarios over the last couple of biennium. And I do think that this the directive that LFO is recommending to us here is doable. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be perfect, but I do think that the Commission can work with this. And with that, if there is no other discussion around package 200 is the one we're on right now, I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation to package 200. I have the motion. Is there further discussion on the motion? Is there objection? Representative Schaffler has indicated his objection. Representative March is objecting. With those objections noted, the motion is carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I consider us all the same team, too. And I know it's difficult, so I didn't mean my comments to be taken incorrectly. It's just when there's one hydraulic, it's a little hard to move things around, and that's what we're concerned about.
I have no doubt that you're going to do a great job with this. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next recommendation, Recommendation 7, does not deal with expenditure decisions. You have approved expenditure decisions so far that do indeed bring expenditures to the level on the first page, on the table on the first page, that states the 0507 LFO recommendation. So those expenditures and position amounts have already been determined by your motion so far. But there are a couple other items that I would ask for your consideration. And the first is to note that in the budget report, we are going to include, or we would typically include, revised revenue projections to the extent that the projections have changed from the levels in the governor's budget, and also revised beginning balance figures if those have changed. And there are a number of changes here that we're asking you to acknowledge that we would like to put into your budget report. These revisions do not affect the appropriations or expenditure limitations. The revenue and beginning balance adjustments will be described in the budget report. Lottery funds revenue would be increased by the $766,427. You've already approved spending those funds. Federal funds would be reduced by $1,051,930. Other funds of donations and grants revenues, that projection is down about $400,000. And interest income projections are down about $21,690. The beginning balance adjustments in grants and scholarships, excluding the outside of the Aspire program, there's an increase in the projection for that beginning balance of $25,514. Again, what these beginning balances, what these balances generally are, would be funds primarily used to finance the administration of private awards and would come from the donors. In Aspire, there is a very large reduction in the beginning balance, actually an elimination in the beginning balance. In order to eliminate the beginning balance in Aspire, you have to reduce that balance by over $1.5 million. The Aspire program does not actually maintain a balance from biennium to biennium. Its expenses are paid on a reimbursement basis, so as the funds come in, the expenses go out. And over the course of time, a beginning balance has been in the budget system for Aspire when that was, it turns out, not appropriate to be there. So these are not funds that were actually anticipated to be spent. They are funds, though, that were believed to be in the beginning balance that we know will not be there.
And I don't understand why they stayed in the beginning balance until just recently.
I think it was not until the new management for the commission came in that this beginning balance question was really looked into. We probably, including legislative fiscal, should have looked into this further last biennium, but these were the figures that were being reported or proposed, and we did not realize that the Aspire funds were not indeed generating a balance like this.
Do you need a motion in order to implement this, or just an acknowledgement?
I think an acknowledgement would be fine, just so I hear that you don't have any objections to this. This, of course, is not you causing these changes. It's just us noting these changes.
Yeah. Okay.
So noted, huh?
I have general agreement from the committee that we will acknowledge the information presented by LFO with reference to revenues and fund balances.
Just for the record, it was also noted in the subcommittee by DAS, too. So everybody.
Mr. Bender.
Recommendation 8 is not a recommendation that involves funding, but it is a recommendation relating to the Jobs Plus program. The genesis of this recommendation is discussion that occurred in the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means when they were looking at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission's and a particular program, the Jobs Plus program, which the commission administers. The Jobs Plus program is a program that is administered by the commission and also by the Department of Human Services. It's a program that provides participants in the program with education benefits. And in order to receive these education benefits, there's a rather complicated process that currently goes on in which the participant first notifies the Department of Human Services that they are interested in receiving the education benefits to which they are entitled. At that point, funds are transferred to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and then there's a period of time under which the participant can make eligible expenses on education for either themselves or their dependents that the commission will then reimburse. The subcommittee of Ways and Means noted that the education finance benefits were being underutilized, and that not much of the money that was intended for these clients was actually being distributed to them for education program services. So what LFO is recommending is the following. We're recommending that you adopt a budget note which would state that the subcommittee finds that the education benefits available to Jobs Plus programs participants through the individual education account, that's the name of that portion of the program, are underutilized. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission and the Department of Human Services shall jointly report to the Emergency Board no later than April 30th, 2006, on their efforts to improve the utilization of available education benefits by Jobs Plus participants. The report shall include any changes they have implemented to support this effort and the results of these changes to date. The report shall further describe any additional proposals to improve utilization of the available education benefits, including any suggested statutory changes requested for that purpose. So if as a result of these efforts the agencies believe that there are things that should be done that they cannot do under their existing statutes and they would request a change, that should be part of the report as well. LFO will be recommending that this budget note be placed in the budget of the Department of Human Services as well.
Committee members, this has been an item that's been discussed for a long time. There is money for Jobs Plus enrollees to use to go on in their education, and obviously we're just not connecting with those people on this. So I really do favor this budget note. I think we either need to figure out a way to get people into those programs or figure out a better use for the money than just to have it sit around for several years waiting for those options to expire before we can move it.
Or maybe just continue the program altogether. I wouldn't mind seeing DHS utilize some funding maybe to work with one of our institutions of higher education to do a survey of some of these people, find out why they're not taking advantage of this program. I mean, everything we're hearing is anecdotal, third hand, and we don't have any real concrete information of why people aren't.
And I hope that those are the kinds of things that they discuss in this report that they'll put together and bring forward to us. So are there any objections on the committee's part from including this budget note in the budget and also recommending that it be put into the DHS budget? Okay, let's move ahead.
The last item of your work session work would be to approve performance measures for the upcoming biennium for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I would refer you to this table, which lists the performance measures, basically including the performance measures that were approved for the 03-05 biennium, with a large number of them to be deleted because of the agency's withdrawal from the loan program, and a number to be modified or added. And if I may just go through these, Madam Chair, is that how you would like to proceed?
In the interest of time, did the subcommittee go through these?
We did. We had a certain extent, and since I know we're going to ask them to report back to the joint legislative audit committee, we can follow up there, hopefully.
And I think that the ones that have been added are good performance measures, and I agree with the deletions also. So if the committee is happy with accepting the ones that have been agreed upon and then allowing the agency to come before the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, we should perhaps just let that recommendation stand. Let's just note our concurrence with the LFO recommendation for performance measures. And then with that, Mr. Bender, I'm assuming that if we take a motion to move the LFO recommendations into House Bill 5113, we'll have our deal cooked. So I would take a motion to move the LFO recommendations into House Bill 5113 and to move House Bill 5113 as amended to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. I have the motion. Do I have discussion on the motion?
I just wanted to put on the record two things. One, I would prefer that we were rolling out a full it's never full because of the amount that we cut back on the number of students eligibility based on the amount of money available. I think we could raise that. I'd like to see us fully fund this.
Fully fund the governor's budget.
Yeah.
But Representative March, how are you going to do that with your K-12 number in place?
Well, Madam Chair,
that's rhetorical.
I'd be more than happy to tell you.
I want to go there.
So I will be.
I gotta go.
I will be objecting, but.
Okay. Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, then, the motion is carried. And I will carry this in full, and I would be very happy if Representative Jensen was consent to carry this on the floor. And having no further business, committee members, other than to make you aware that the start of tomorrow's subcommittee will be pushed forward to 9:15. So if you can all be that late and still be on time, and I will adjourn this meeting.
Okay.